This Would Be Fun, a show where you call in with your game design woes and we turn them into game design yos. I'm your host, Jeff Warrender, and with me tonight is my good friend, Quentin Hudspeth. Q, welcome to the program.
Hello, everyone.
All right. Now, Q, you are an experienced game designer and playtester, and you're also a voiceover artist these days. And our listeners might recognize you as the voice of Leo Colavini from our friend Mike's Who, What, Why cast. And you're also narrating the You Said This Would Be Fun audiobook. And my question for you is, well, I have a few, but my first is probably what our audience wants to know most is how you got involved in voice work in the first place. Was it something you always had an interest in or something that you found out about and decided to try your hand at?
A little bit of both. I found out about it by accident in one of those flyers from Schenectady County Community College, you know, the summer classes that they hold. There's a company in Albany called Voice Coaches, and they were holding a seminar called Making Money with Your Voice or something like that. And I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. So I signed up for the seminar, and that's kind of what got me into it. It was a lot of fun, and so I did some coaching and, you know, teaching with them. But what it really tapped into was I missed reading to my daughter. So, you know, since Kaylin was old enough to pay attention, we read to her aloud. And when the day came that, you know, she wanted to read to herself, I kind of missed that. I enjoyed being the one, you know, that I want dad to read because he does the voices better, you know, that kind of thing. Not that I do voices that well, but, you know, when you're three. So I missed that, and I really enjoy narrating. So my focus is on narration, though I do also, I have done some dramatic podcasts here and there, and have done some, I guess it's still narration, some explainer videos. Mm-hmm. I'm the voice of the most recent Packed Bags video for their Indiegogo, I think it was.
Now that was actually going to be one of my questions is I could imagine people in the board game industry could use your services for things like a Kickstarter video or maybe an intro to a podcast or if they have some kind of, you know, maybe a app assisted aspect to their game or something. Have you found that that kind of work is available, that people are advertising that kind of thing?
Yeah, you do see that occasionally. It's just a matter of running across it. And I think a lot of folks in our hobby don't know where to look to get that sort of help. So places that you can go and post, you know, basically want ads. There's a company called Star Now. They're based out of New Zealand. And they, most of the things that you find there are low-paying, low-profile jobs, sort of like that, where it's like, I need somebody to do this either for free or, you know, for future consideration or, you know, things like that. Backstage.com, also another good place where you can post for that sort of thing. Voices.com, Voices123. So those are some places where folks in the gaming hobby who might want someone to, you know, just do a quick voiceover for their explainer video for their game, you know. I don't write my own copy. When I have written copy to explain, like, for my own games, I've never been very happy with it. But I'm happy to read someone else's copy and try to make it sound like a human.
All right. Good. Well, yeah, no, it sounds like, it sounds like that's definitely something that people could take advantage of. And I think with the advent of Kickstarter and everything, there's probably lots of need for that. So it would be neat to have your two hobbies intersect in that way, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have a caller on line one. We have John from Richmond. And John, you're going to benefit from hearing game design advice with Q's dulcet tones. And John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Jeff.
Good
Long,
job.
long-time listener, first-time caller.
All right.
I've been
Great.
waiting
Well,
so long to be able to use that.
it's well, it's great to have you on the program, and we thank you for your loyalty all these long years. So, John, you are calling about a game that you're working on, and why don't you tell us a little bit about the game, how it works a little bit, and what your question for us is that we might be able to help you with.
Yeah, sure. My design is called Scooped Dice Cream Rivals. It's a family weight roll and write game that involves some dice drafting, area control, and card combos, playing cards to kind of manipulate the dice. It's a modern twist on dots and boxes, if you're familiar with it. It's kind of a coin flip in play testing, whether people have heard of it. But it's a, you know, imagine a 6x6 grid of what would be squares, and they're just dots, and you kind of are taking turns connecting those dots, and eventually you're going to surround a space, and you're going to then control that space, and those spaces are worth points. So you'll be able to score points there. And then I've kind of also more recently, as it's evolved, come up with some ways that the points, that the cards you play are also worth points. And that is where the design has kind of gotten to. I'm very, very happy with where it is. But just always wanting to look into whether, you know, there's any other avenue for exploring, you know, just an interesting place for points to come up, or, you know, fun things. You know, points are really just kind of the way to get into, you know, what you want, you know, leading the players to do. But right now it's just kind of a very basic, you know, the area control on the board, and then the cards that you play being worth points at the end.
And
So
the
I've
cards.
tried some other things I can go into, but yeah, that's kind of where I am right now.
I had one or two more questions before we get into all that. You said it's a roll and write. Does everybody have their own? It sounds like it must be that we're all working on a shared grid if it's that if it's built off the dots and boxes framework, right? Okay.
Yes. So that is one of the design goals that I had was as a differentiator that it would be an interactive roll and write where you are, you know, yes, very much battling, you know, over the same grid. You know, so there's lots of player interaction for picking the dice, and you know, then being able to kind of play the cards on your turn to manipulate the dice that you pick to, you know, strategically draw a line maybe that closes two spaces at once, and being able to score that, or you know, some of the cards let you draw two lines with one die. So very much looking to give, basically my design aesthetic has been, you know, oh, this seems like it's, you know, way too powerful. Well, then let's just make everything else more powerful, because the more powerful stuff has been what's gotten, you know, that look in a player's eyes of like, yes, I pulled this off. You know, I was able to do this crazy move that scored me a bunch of points. And like everyone's kind of got the same ability to do that. So it's not like, you know, kind of really swingy, but it really, you know, family weight, looking for, you know, keeping the complexity down, which is a big, you know, challenge of mine. I always try and overcomplicate it. So it might be that, you know, it doesn't need more place for points, but I can't leave without, you know, looking for more opportunities, I guess.
Sure. All
right. How do the dice determine where you can draw your lines? Are we talking just
Yeah.
D6s?
Yep, they're just D6s. So there's four D6s, one in each color. And then the grid is kind of, there's four quadrants, so one in each color. And then, you know, the dice have to be used in the color quadrant that they match up with.
Gotcha.
And so then on the board in the space, there's a die face between 1 and 6. So if you roll a 6, a blue 6, you have to draw a line somewhere around the blue 6 connecting dots. Yeah.
But do you actually roll a 6, or is it a, there's a, like a display of one die in each color and you pick a die from the display and that's where you're going to write this turn?
Yeah. So to start the round, one of the players will roll all four dice, kind of set them around, and then they get first pick of the four dice. And they'll have a hand of cards that let them, add one to the die or, subtract one from all the dice. Lots of different abilities to kind of manipulate them to get them where you want them to be. And then you're going to pick one and no one else gets to pick that color. Then the person, in clockwise gets to pick and it's going to go around. And eventually whoever's last, it goes up to four players. So when you draw a line in one of the quadrants, you'll score any points, but there's also a flipped up card that you're going to get to draw. So you might not really care at the beginning of the game where you draw a line because it's not going to get you any points, but you're going to see, oh, if I draw a line over in the blue area, I'm going to get this really cool card. And, everyone can kind of have, oh, I really need this kind of card or that kind of card. So there's not necessarily a best option. Just looking at each of the four cards available to you.
Nice. So you've got things pulling you in two directions, trying to score points by getting areas, but also by trying to pull up other cards, and therefore you might be incentivized to do something that's not very good for you just Correct. To get that card.
Right. Exactly. Right.
That's a nice touch. I forgot what I was going to ask earlier. So you go, Jeff.
Okay, so what I was going to say is it sounds like basically the gist of this is that this is an area enclosure game. And so the greatest area enclosure game, I think, is probably Lohenhertz by Klaus Tuber himself. And that was re-released in a sort of streamlined fashion in a game called Domain. And these are both probably late 90s, early 2000s. But there was another game that actually Leo Colavini talked about in the interview that you voiced Leo, Q, that a game called Alexandros. And he lamented that it wasn't a bigger hit and that it was kind of area enclosure in a triangular sort of grid. So a little different layout. But I think my first reaction to hearing about this with the ice cream theme is to ask what the connection between the ice cream truck aspect of the game and the area enclosure seems to be. But then I'm going to let you answer that. But the funny thing is, Q, you might remember this. There was a number of years ago here in our area in upstate New York, there was a ice cream truck driver who actually got arrested for harassing another ice cream truck driver. He was basically following the guy and turning on his sirens really loud and basically saying, "You're in my turf, get out of here. You're not welcome here." So so actually there is apparently some, a turf war aspect to ice cream truck driving. I had no idea it was such a contentious business, but.
Yeah, so Jonathan, how does the theme work itself into the area control?
So I'll explain the cards that let you manipulate the dice. They have, they're all different, mostly different flavors of ice cream.
Right. Do you use the cards to manipulate the dice or do you save them for points?
Well, as it is now, they are doing both. So you play it to manipulate the die and then you're going to get to choose, if you don't have anything to put ice cream in, then you're going to, of course, flip it. And it'll be either a small cone, a bowl, or a waffle cone.
Okay. So then you're playing off. The tension is not necessarily playing a card that is good for your area control, but playing it so that you can get it out. You may not really want to play vanilla because you like that six, but you want to play it because you're trying to score it. So it's a subtle tension.
Yeah.
Seems a little disconnected from the area control aspect. I was hoping that somehow we were collecting ice cream by, closing in a square allows you a pint of this, or, you know, two squares is a quart, and, you know, get four squares for a whole gallon or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or alternatively, something where there's some connection to, you know, the flavors that you have, and the, and that creates demand, and that gives you the ability to draw more lines on your turn, or something like that. But I guess, you know, you'd have to do the dice drafting differently to allow something more complicated like that. I guess the question I would have then, you know, before we think about other scoring ideas that could be introduced to this game, is, you know, in my book, one of the things we talk about is the idea that the scoring system serves to motivate players. And it does that specifically by leading as you said at the outset, it creates incentives that direct their behavior, but it specifically directs them towards a fun experience. It is kind of an agreement you're making with the players that says that if you pursue this scoring system, then you're going to have a fun time playing this game as defined by whatever type of game it is. And so I guess my question is, in your play testing of the game so far, do you find that the scoring, you know, the dilemma between working on the board versus working on the cards, do you find that players are responding to the game in the way that you hope that they would, that it feels like the kind of light family game that and the kind of experience that, you know, that you would hope a game like that would create for the players? Because if it's working very well, we shouldn't think about changing it. Whereas if the experience isn't really coming through, then we can really use the scoring system to try and steer the experience towards what you want it.
The biggest thing I've encountered in some of the other things I've tried is 100% what you're saying is getting not, I want to, you know, try and keep the focus on the board, on points, and the focus on that board, and you know, fighting in that cutthroat ice cream turf war that you referenced earlier. Mm-hmm. But when it was just that, in earlier iterations, it just didn't quite have enough going for it. And so I'd added some symbols and just made it more of a set collection, you know, with cards at the end. And so I could give a very powerful card ability maybe doesn't have any symbol, and so it's kind of worth no points at the end. I've definitely gone down some roads that took it too far, in my opinion, too far away from the board. And again, kind of for the weight that I'm looking for, I don't want to get too fancy and have people all over the place, because it's like, oh yeah, I wasn't even, you know, paying attention to scoring things this way because it was too much. It was too much.
Right.
No, that's right. That's the right way to think about it. I mean, for a family weight game, sort of players being split in two different directions is actually, can actually be quite a challenge for casual players. So, so that's not a bad instinct.
So you want to try to refocus people's attention on more of what's going on the board. So I'm trying to think of this from the perspective of theme and what can draw players in. So I'm imagining, what is it about area control that would interest consumers of ice cream? Because I'm assuming that's what we're going from. It's like we're not, the players are not the avatars of ice cream vendors, but rather ice cream consumers. Imagine, you know, you just grabbed your family, you went to Friendly's. Uh-huh. Friendly's being a chain that may not exist everywhere in the country. I think it's only a Northeast thing. Yeah. So
yeah.
You went to an ice cream parlor. So imagine that each quadrant represents a topping or a category of toppings. And when you manage to close off an area, that garners you some topping from that category. So one color might be fruit, and you might have just gotten some cherries or pineapple tidbits or something like that. And so what you're trying to do then is your set collection is trying to make the best sundae for yourself.
Yeah, so it's like a make your own sundae sort of bar kind of thing.
That's a theme that I think that smaller humans will probably, younger humans, I shouldn't say smaller humans, younger humans might be able to get into a little bit more than the more esoteric, I'm driving a truck and being a business person.
Yeah.
Then you still have that. You still have the idea that, so perhaps I close off this area in the red sector. It gains me this card that I can then add to my set collection. I get the cherries card or something like that. And that might allow you to tie in the interest in what's going on in the board without necessarily it being a scoring direct points. But then that then gets pushed over into the cards, and your scoring is all on your set collection. So it sort of delays the scoring from the area. And it's instead of having to think about two different scoring things.
So the set that you're collecting would be like symbols on the board, as opposed to having those symbols on the card.
Right. Yeah. So like you've got your symbol of the dice that you're trying to surround, because that tells you where to go. But you might have spanning across two of the dice pictures could be a picture of a couple cherries. So if I can manage to get both of those, I get the cherry card, and now maybe I'm trying to. In a way that Flux works, where you've got your goals, where you're trying to, you might have a goal that is cherries, chocolate sauce, and peanuts. That's a set, And the different set goals could change from game to game.
I've tried having like symbols on the cards, actually. And again, it just took. It was just too much.
Yeah.
So I have a suggestion that I think is more in keeping with the original construct, but I really like Q's idea. I think that's absolutely crazy and cool. But the thing I was going to say is that again, we're thinking of this as an area enclosure game. And so when we think of ourselves as ice cream truck operators, we think about not maybe necessarily so much as wanting to control areas. We want to control locations. If I'm an ice cream truck driver, I want to control the splash pad. I want to control the playground. I want to control the school because that's where the kids are. And so I think you could bring the theme out more effectively if we don't just have a grid of this is blue, this is red, this is yellow, but within this area, here's sort of the here's where the school is, here's where the park is, here's where the ball field is, or whatever. And maybe some of these span multiple squares, so the more lucrative something is, the harder it is to control. This probably means there has to be some way for certain edges to change hands or something like that. But I could see how it could also lead to a more tangible connection between the cards in your hand and the play on the board. Now it's not so much that I can either have scoops of ice cream or I can have turf, but it's more that to be able to control turf, the more valuable the turf is, the more I have to be able to offer the kids that in terms of either selection or just having enough to serve something as big as the playground, whereas just a street with a few houses on it is an easy thing to have enough ice cream. So now I'm having to balance between the stuff I'm doing off the board and the stuff I'm doing on the board. And the details of that, I have no idea how any of that would work. But that's kind of what seems like it would resonate for me with this particular theme, is the idea of, I know where the kids are. I want to go where the kids are, and I want to have exactly what it is that's in demand, or have enough ice cream to serve them all, or whatever the challenge is for the players. It seems to me that is a potentially fun thing that you could do within the original construct that you were working with.
It'd be a bit more tactical. But more focused, less abstract. I mean, the same sort of tactics as your what you've just described, because you're still just, I'm trying to, you know, enclose this box.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives you a handle from a story perspective. It lends itself to telling a story during the game, and that's important, especially for a family weight game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the question of where the friction between the players comes from. And it's a bit abstract to say, I just want to control big boxes. Now, granted, with the Dyson or the Dots and Boxes game is familiar, people will have a good intuitive feel for that. So I don't think that's a bad framework. But I do think the idea of I need to control the park, I need to control, you know, the playground or whatever, you know, that will lead us into collisions with each other, because you also want to control the park and you also want to control the playground. And it's, what am I going to let you have? What am I going to contest? And when I show up, do I have what I need to be able to contest that turf, or, mm-hmm. you know, am I going to fizzle or my ice cream melt or whatever the right metaphor is?
I like the idea of the cards that you are collecting somehow then being spent to empower you to, you know, encircle more area, you know, vis-a-vis I have ice cream to sell.
Yeah. And I mean, right now the four neighborhoods are, you know, or each quadrant is themed as, you know, a residential neighborhood, the park, the beach, or the city. But I really like the idea of people understand, like, okay, well, if I go to the, you know, deserted neighborhood, there is not worth very many points. But if I go where, you know, the playground, like, that is always going to be worth a ton of points, that kind of thing. That's really great.
Okay. Well, John, I hope that these ideas are helpful, give you some stuff to think about. And we just want to thank you so much for being on the show tonight, and definitely call us back and let us know how things are going with the game. We want to hear an update on this one. I think there's a lot of promise here. So very excited to hear where this goes.
I'd like to play this someday. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. All the great ideas and feedback.
That is all the time we have for tonight, but I want to thank Q, Quentin Hudspeth, for joining us as the guest on our show. Q, if people want to find you, where do they find you for voice work or game work on the internet?
QuentinHudspeth.com.
And if you want to find my book, You Said This Would Be Fun, it's available at Amazon or DriveThruRPG. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to call into the show, email us at jeff@belltowergames.com. And from all of us here, thank you and good night.
Good night.